Welcome back to the second hour of Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Here on this Monday, we're going to be looking at Friday's National Prayer Service for the victims of Hurricane Katrina that's held at the Washington National Cathedral in D.C. First, we're going to review the sermon. It's a short sermon, about 10 minutes, from Bishop T.D. Jakes of the Potter's House in Dallas, Texas. The sermon is on a passage from Luke, and the sermon is about the Good Samaritan, at least ostensibly about the Good Samaritan parable that Jesus tells. We'll see what T.D. Jakes has to say about it. He pulls what he calls his 5 points out of that parable to preach there in the wake of Katrina's devastation of the southern part of our country. Well, it's all compassion and singing and praying. We'll also be hearing some of the prayers a little bit later here on Issues, Etc. Some of the prayers prayed at the National Prayer Service for Katrina victims at the Washington National Cathedral. I invite your questions and your comments as well. 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. Let's go through our diagnostic. We'll go through it anyway because we're going to have to listen to see if Jesus is mentioned. The great thing about this diagnostic is that if you're dealing with a sermon that is just completely Christless, the diagnostic pretty much answers the question for you by the time you've heard the whole sermon, because the first part of it is, does Jesus get mentioned? Just keep a running tally of how often Jesus is mentioned. Now, the basic rule of thumb at work here is, if Jesus doesn't get mentioned, then the sermon really didn't have much to do with Jesus at all, if anything. Now, we're not talking about mentions of God, the Almighty. For that matter, you could argue that the Muslim imam who prayed at this national prayer service mentioned Jesus because he ends his prayer in the name of God. Well, a reference to God, a generic God, will not do. It's got to be Jesus, Christ, something along those lines. Just keep track of how often it's mentioned. Then, if Jesus is mentioned, and there are some sermons we have reviewed where Jesus has not been mentioned at all. If Jesus is mentioned, then is he the subject of the verbs? This is a simple discernment of grammar. Is Jesus the one doing the action, running the verbs, or is he the one being acted upon, where you or someone else is running the verbs? And if Jesus is mentioned and he is in fact the subject of the verbs, then what are those verbs? What is it the preacher is telling you that Jesus does for you? Now, we'll see whether T.D. Jakes' sermon, preached on Friday at the National Cathedral, can get past the first part of the diagnostic. T.D. Jakes is what, well, Christianity Today said several years ago, perhaps the successor to Billy Graham, not in Billy Graham's organization, but in the hearts of the American people. He is pastor of a huge megachurch, the Potter's House, in Dallas, Texas. He speaks nationally. He's made movies, record albums. He's got more books than probably anybody but Billy Graham. These books are sold broadly throughout Christian bookstores. He is well known. He also comes from Oneness Pentecostalism. Now, he doesn't say he's still a Oneness Pentecostal, but he comes from Oneness Pentecostalism, and one of the big questions that surrounded T.D. Jakes for some years now, ever since forever, but in particular since Jerry Buckner, a regular guest on this program, did an article on T.D. Jakes for the Christian Research Journal, was, does T.D. Jakes believe in the biblical teaching of the Trinity? Jerry Buckner concludes, no. At least he won't say he does. He comes closer to saying he doesn't, which is kind of the standard position taken by many former Oneness Pentecostals. They're just not that fond of the doctrine of the Trinity, and they won't come down on it. So we'll say, in my book, that's a denial of the doctrine of the Trinity. If you won't say you believe it, then you don't believe it. Now, that should give us an interesting insight into the sermon that T.D. Jakes will be preaching here. Now, they're being mean to me today. They're making me run a little bit of my own buttons, and I am inept when it comes to talking and pressing buttons at the same time. But let's remember our diagnostic. He's going to begin with some thoughtful words about this service and about the people who are there and some greetings, of course, and then he'll get into the parable of the Good Samaritan. Here's T.D. Jakes.
To President and Mrs. Bush, to Vice President and Mrs. Cheney, to all that are assembled here, and most importantly, to all families who have been deeply touched by this catastrophic storm, our prayers are with you, as we understand that God is the only one who can heal the wounded and bruised soul of this nation and its families, and those particularly in the Gulf. As we face these troubled times, we look to God's word for solace and comfort and strength. There are many passages that would provide that solution and peace for us. But my heart is fixed today on the Gospel of St. Luke, chapter 10, verse 30 through 34. In the text, it speaks specifically about a man who went down from Jerusalem to Jericho and fell amongst thieves, which stripped him of his raiment and wounded him, departed, leaving him half dead. And by chance there came by a priest. He saw him. He passed by. A Levite came. He looked too, but he passed by on the other side. Finally, a Samaritan passed by his way. Only the Samaritan came where he was, and when he saw him, he had that thing that we so desperately need today. He had compassion on him. He went to him and bound up his wounds, pouring in oil and wine, and set him on his own beast and brought him to an inn and took care of him. Briefly, I would talk to you about the power of a helping hand. Five simple truths that are born out of this text that are so relevant as we face this time of perplexity and crisis, confusion, hurting in our nation. Number one, the Levite and the priest show us that restoration is more than observation. It's more than looking from the safety of our television into the lives of other people and assessing their situation from the comfort of our own luxuries and lives. It teaches us that we can no longer be a nation that overlooks the poor and the suffering and continue past the ghetto on our way to the Mardi Gras.
Now, this is the beginning. He's got his 5 points that he's going to lay out for us. The first one being that just watching an event take place is not enough. You know what strikes me initially about T.D. Jakes' take on this parable? And you got to hand it to him. At least he's going to the Bible. He could just wax eloquent. He's an eloquent man. He could just wax eloquent for 10 minutes in this sermon, and no one would have thought less of him. But he actually goes to the Bible. So let's give him credit for actually going to the text of the Bible. Now, just going to the Bible, however, is merely the first step in biblical preaching. You can quote the Bible, you can talk about a Bible passage, but that doesn't mean you're going to rightly interpret it, and that doesn't mean you're necessarily going to get to Christ and Him crucified. So, he starts there, and his first point is, well, let's look at the priests and the Levites. The priests and the Levites, they observe, but they don't help. It's not necessarily enough just to watch it from our televisions. And, well, that's a pretty obvious moral point, isn't it? If you're going to help, just watching it happen is, you're just watching it happen, watching people suffer. That's a valid moral point. I wouldn't disagree with it at all. The question remains, however, is that what this parable of the Good Samaritan is really all about?
Or past Harlem for Manhattan, or past Compton for Rodeo Drive. Secondly, from this text, we learn that we must reach beyond our neighborhoods. The text is born out of a question that the disciples ask Jesus, who is my neighbor? I submit to you, ladies and gentlemen, our neighbors are more than the people who look like us, who live where we live, who drive what we drive, or vote the way we vote. In fact, in all likelihood, the person who gave this man the most service was the Good Samaritan. Different in ethnicity from the victim, but moved with compassion, he responded powerfully to the crisis at hand. I'm struck today by the response around this nation as I moved from one shelter to another and saw the helping hands reaching out to touch the victim. The stories that have not been told is that those hands came in all colors, all cultures, all kinds, all ecclesiastical entanglements, all philosophical viewpoints without distinction.
Now, his second point, we need to reach beyond our neighborhoods to help those who are in need. Now, he gets this from the parable by saying that the Samaritan, the one who actually did help the man who had been fallen among thieves along the side of the road, the man who did actually help was not of his same ethnic background. He's going to make some more of this a little bit later in his sermon. And so he draws a parallel between that and those who are helping and the helping hands that were extended to the victims coming from just about every walk of life, every color and creed. Have you heard sermons on this parable before that sound like this? Sermons that could have been preached by T.D. Jakes. Now he's gone into, he's got 5 points, he's two-fifths of his way through his sermon so far, and while he is certainly using a parable of Jesus, Jesus hasn't been mentioned. So far, and I think this is a safe assessment, this sermon is about us. He's taking this parable of the Good Samaritan and interpreting it in, well, really and particularly in terms of what's happened to our nation after Hurricane Katrina and the relief efforts, and some lessons to learn about how we ought to help one another. Now, I don't know how much this sermon is in. I think it wouldn't be asking too much of Bishop Jakes to say that this sermon ought to comfort the victims of Katrina, ought to bring the event of Katrina and its aftermath into spiritual focus. So far, all we're getting out of Katrina from Bishop Jakes are some moral lessons. Valid moral lessons, certainly. But if the theological significance of this kind of suffering, this kind of tragedy, and its aftermath goes no farther than moralism, you don't really need Jesus for this. This could be preached by just about any religion, even really, to tell you the truth, an atheist.
When America's soul was hemorrhaging, all hands reached from everywhere in a philanthropic way. And today, while we mourn with those that mourn and we worry with those that worry and we wait with those that wait, we do also take a moment to say thank you to all the many people from around this country and around the world who open up their doors and their homes and their hearts and their lives and their pocketbooks. And if we continue on that path, when the excitement diminishes, if we continue on that path to understand that our neighbors are not always the people who are nearest to us, then perhaps some good will come out of this catastrophic event.
I think he's going to steal George W. Bush's thunder here. Because this is really nothing more than any politician would say. Let's learn the lessons about how we ought to help one another better after Katrina. And let's, if the good things that happened here, let's keep doing those things. The money that we've given and opening our pocketbooks and our hearts, let's keep doing that. And if we've done that, then maybe some good will come out of this. Now, this is, at least by his own profession, a Christian preacher. I will point out to you that I don't disagree with anything he said. This is a classic example of a sermon that nothing in it is in itself untrue. But is this what the parable of the Good Samaritan has to say to us, to all? You know, his audience is Christian, non-Christian. His audience is C-SPAN nationwide. I think this was maybe even been carried by some of the networks. If there's an opportunity to profess Christ in the midst of this suffering, if there's an opportunity to draw from the Luke parable something more than just little moral lessons that we can all learn, and you listen to this stuff, you say, yeah, I agree, but I already knew that, right? And if we end up with post-Katrina, everyone knows how to help each other just a little bit better. And that's really all we need to learn here. That's really all we need to hear here. We don't need a Christian preacher to tell us that. They could have asked the Muslim imam. They could have asked the Jewish rabbi. They could have asked the president to get up and say this. And he really, really wouldn't have needed Jesus' parable to do it either.
Katrina, perhaps she has done something to this nation that we needed to have done. She has made us think and look and reach beyond the breach and dare to discuss the unmentionable issues that confront us on a day-to-day basis, to deal with our differences and distinctives and perspectives, and to talk about things that are not politically correct. The third thing you will notice is that the Good Samaritan, who came riding in on his beast, found a victim who had been victimized laying on the ground. And he learned the precious truth, the powerful elixir, that you cannot help people if you exalt yourself above them. So he came down off of his beast so that the man who was on the ground could get up. And I submit to you, ladies and gentlemen, until we love enough to trade places with the poor, the disadvantaged, the disenfranchised, and yes, even minorities in this country, then healing will not be real, and it will never be complete. May God give us the grace to come down where pain is and poverty is, and not stop until we have raised them up to an acceptable standard of living. For with such sacrifices, God is well pleased.
Okay. God is certainly pleased if we're helping the poor. Does it please God in such a way so that we may know that his favor rests upon us? No. God is pleased with anyone who helps the poor in the sense that he would rather have you do that than hurt the poor. But Christian preachers shouldn't concern themselves, not even in the least, with what pleases God in that sense. Katrina will come, Katrina will go. The problem that all of T.D. Jakes' listeners, the dignitaries, the luminaries, the religious, the non-religious, the believers, the unbelievers, people listening now via radio, people listening then via C-SPAN, the problem that confronts us all is far bigger than Katrina, and he hasn't addressed it yet, which also explains why he hasn't mentioned Jesus yet. See, sin is not our problem. If poverty is the problem, you know, I do not know what he's delivering here that couldn't be delivered by any kind of left-of-center Republican or right-of-center Democrat in any political speech. He talks about Katrina making us think. What really ought to concern a Christian preacher in a Christian pulpit preaching in a worship service is, did Katrina make us repent? He talks about, well, maybe now we can broach subjects that we wouldn't have talked about before, and maybe we can address things that are not altogether politically correct. What is the most politically incorrect thing ever, at any time, even in an age where political correctness doesn't rule like it does in ours? The message of Jesus Christ as the only way, the only truth, the only life. Would that Bishop T.D. Jakes would be that politically incorrect to actually preach the crucified and risen Savior during this sermon for the prayer service in remembrance of Katrina victims in Washington, D.C. at the National Cathedral? You know, he had a great setup for it. They sang in their opening verse at this service, they sang the words of John 3:16. He would not have, if he really wanted to kind of, all right, I'm going to mention Jesus, but don't get mad at me, the rest of you guys. He could have just said, well, we heard the choir sing, for God so loved the world. But he doesn't. He's got an audience that's probably equally mixed between believers and unbelievers. Paul talks about making the most of every opportunity. What does he mean? Does he mean come in and say kind of this boilerplate, let's all help one another, reach beyond our neighborhoods, and you can't help someone if you exalt yourself kind of stuff that you could hear from any politician? Or does he mean making the most of every opportunity to proclaim Christ? Here's the basic question. And it's really a question that goes beyond T.D. Jakes and a National Prayer Service in Washington, D.C., and something you may see televised on cable. Is the message of the cross relevant at all when having a service for Katrina victims? Is it relevant? One would think that given this opportunity, this is an opportunity of a lifetime, even for T.D. Jakes, that one would say, I got to say what's most important. I'm not going to spend time saying things that other people have said. I'm not going to spend time going back over what we all know. I should say what is most important. What would that be? I'm a Christian preacher. What would that be? You know, I think I'll talk about 5 points of how we can learn moral lessons from the parable of the Good Samaritan, and he's up to point 3, that observing isn't enough and reaching beyond our neighborhoods is important, and you can't help if you elevate yourself. And I'll think of 2 more before the sermon is over, and that's what's most important. If we can't preach the cross at a time like this and at an opportunity like this, then I wonder what he's preaching on any given Sunday. This man is, or has been called, perhaps the next Billy Graham. I've seen Billy Graham preach sermons like this. Even Billy Graham, who's become more politically correct the older he gets, even Billy Graham manages to preach the cross at an opportunity like this. Lay aside the fact that T.D. Jakes is unwilling to fess up to the biblical doctrine of the Trinity. Lay aside the fact that he hasn't even mentioned Jesus at all. Lay aside the fact that he is saying nothing more than you could hear from George Bush or from any other politician or from anybody. Here he is, given the pulpit, 10 minutes to say what's most important, and what he talks about is, well, we just need to help each other more. And maybe if we help each other more and do what's good and stop, you know, doing things that don't work, maybe then some good will have come out of all of this. That's not good news, folks. We can help each other after hurricane, after hurricane, after hurricane. And it won't deal with our basic problem, our sin, our estrangement from God. Now, that's a message that's politically incorrect. Apparently, even in an age when now we can talk about things that are politically incorrect, even that's too incorrect for Bishop T.D. Jakes. Our call-in number is 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. After this break, we'll continue our sermon review of T.D. Jakes' Friday sermon at the National Cathedral for the victims of Hurricane Katrina, this national prayer service. And then we'll be hearing some of the prayers from that service and getting your reaction as well during open lines. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. I don't think we've done a T.D. Jakes sermon before. This is the first one. This is a big one. This is, you might call it a history-making speech. I don't think it's a believer-making speech, though.
Defending the faith, teaching the truth. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
We've all heard about the unrest, atrocities, and persecution in the Sudan. Well, LCMS World Relief is on the front lines of providing comfort and hope through several projects. They're helping to provide emergency food for children in southern Sudan, school books and supplies, grinding mills for Sudanese in refugee camps, and enhancements to St. Paul Lutheran Medical Center in Khartoum. Now, for more information on how you can help support relief efforts in the Sudan, look for the LCMS World Relief logo on our homepage, issuesetc.org. Their phone number, 314-996-1683. Late last year, the Republic of Sudan and the Sudan People's Liberation Army reached a peace accord. Many Sudanese who fled their homes will be returning. You can help the resettlement and the education of these refugees by supporting LCMS World Relief. Issuesetc.org or 314-996-1683. LCMS World Relief.
This is Family News in Focus. I'm Bob Dittmer. President George W. Bush, in his address to the nation, outlined several proposals that will comprise one of the largest reconstruction projects in American history. The cost will put a heavy burden on the federal government, stuck with high deficits and record spending, unless one very capable group steps forward. Bill Wilson reports.
Beginning with a national day of prayer, the president kicked off one of the largest undertakings of the federal government, a revival in his words.
On this national day of prayer and remembrance, we pledge ourselves to the demanding work of revival and renew the faith and hope that will carry that work to completion.
Meanwhile, a group of pastors from across America gathered in front of the White House, hoping to encourage the church to fashion its own revival for rebuilding hope, hearts, and families. Reverend Patrick Mahoney of the Christian Defense Coalition.
Government can rebuild a home, but government can't rebuild a human heart, can't rebuild a family, it can't rebuild the brokenness. Only God's love and mercy can do that.
Mahoney says the church has a historic opportunity to embrace a new era of revival.
We are praying that the church rises up and goes into those communities, reaches out not only with the tangible cement, bricks, wood, water, food, but goes in with the message of God's love, His healing power.
These pastors, like the president, believe the church should play an integral role in empowering people and defeating poverty as the Gulf Coast is rebuilt, and that will bless the entire nation. For Family News and Focus, I'm Bill Wilson in Washington.
President also suggests schools adopt schools and churches adopt churches in the hurricane-ravaged area as a way to help victims of Katrina get back on their feet. For Family News in Focus, I'm Bob Dittmer.
On Tuesday's Midday Living Jubilee, live at 11:05 on AGAM 850 KFUO. Join Joni Harwell and me, Diane Summers. We visit with Mark Bender of St. Paul's Lutheran Church in De Pere about a hymn festival coming up, which will feature the music director of the radio program Sing for Joy. And our favorite person from Pebble Publishing, Brett Dufer, will be our guest and talk about day trips this fall. It begins at 11:05, Living Jubilee.
Was the Book of Mormon given to Joseph Smith by an angel or created from a work of fiction? Our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for September is titled, Who Really Wrote the Book of Mormon? You can find out more by calling Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040. 1-800-325-3040. Or look for the cover of Who Really Wrote the Book of Mormon on our website, issuesetc.org.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. We're halfway through the program. Reviewing a sermon by Bishop T.D. Jakes that was preached at the National Cathedral in Washington, D.C. on Friday for the special service for Katrina victims. Now, this is a monumental place. The music was unbelievable. They pulled everybody in. The president was there. Everyone was there. This was a national event. No two ways about it. A national event. And so far, what we're getting from T.D. Jakes is it's not good enough just to observe when your neighbor is in need. You have to reach beyond your neighborhood to people who you don't think are your neighbors, and you can't help if you exalt yourself. He's mentioned God for the first time. Actually, twice he's mentioned God. No Jesus. He said that God is certainly pleased when we help our neighbor, and he said, may God grant us the grace to not exalt ourselves, in essence. Now, he also used that word grace, and someone might say, well, there you go. That's all I need. That's all I needed to hear. He said grace, and that word opens up a whole world of good news for me, and I know what he means by grace. Well, you're not the only one listening to this sermon. This is that little rule that I have given you so often as we review sermons, and when you listen to sermons on Sundays or any other time you listen to sermons, don't do the preacher's job for him. Any preacher worth his salt doesn't need you, shouldn't need you to do his job for him. If he doesn't preach Christ, don't fill in the gaps. If it is a Christless, crossless sermon, which this one is shaping up to be, don't say, well, I heard him say grace. That must mean the grace of God in Jesus Christ. Therefore, I think I heard the cross. No. Listen for the cross specifically. If it's not there, just admit it, and find a different preacher. See, we do this too often. We listen for, and what we hear, we agree with. These are the two errors we make. We either hear a sermon that we agree with, and we don't ever say, was Jesus in there? Was my sin proclaimed? Was my Savior proclaimed? We never ask that because we agree with the sermon. We just like hearing what we want to hear, which pretty well fits the definition that Jesus warns us against, and the apostle warns us against, of in those latter days, they will gather around them a great number of teachers who will tell them what their itching ears want to hear. He's talking about us. When we listen to sermons that we agree with, nothing wrong in that sermon, but we are not listening for Christ in the sermon, and we give the preacher a pass. Or the other error that we make is the preacher gets close but no cigar. He'll talk about God and His mercy and His grace, how great God is and how God's there to help us, and we just fill in all of the empty spaces with our own knowledge of, now sometimes our own knowledge of Jesus and what He's done for us. Sometimes you have to do that, otherwise you don't get fed, but it's a little bit like your mother setting a plate of food in front of you that has got peas, then an empty space, and then, let's say, mashed potatoes, and then another empty space. The chicken is missing, and there's no gravy. But you say, ah, delicious chicken, and the gravy couldn't have been better, Mom. You fill in the gaps. I'm pretending to eat chicken. Yum, 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 yum. Ooh, it's so delicious. She didn't serve chicken. She didn't put gravy on the mashed potatoes. You should notice that. When Jesus is missing from a sermon, just as much as you should notice when He's there, you should notice when He isn't there. And so far in T.D. Jake's sermon, Jesus isn't there.
The fourth point I would submit to you is that resources, not rhetoric, changed this man's life. The Good Samaritan never said a word to the victim. He simply helped him. It is not so important what we say. It is important what we do. Defining moments of history cannot be defined by rhetoric and words or anger or soliciting people to respond in a tempestuous way, but real leadership is defined by what we do. The Good Samaritan teaches us that it will cost money to help people, and sometimes we have to love them enough to pay the bill. The fifth point is that relationships are productive. If the Good Samaritan had not known the innkeeper, then the victim would have suffered from the dysfunction of their relationships. I say to you that this is a time, in spite of our distinctives, that we must find a way to know each other if we can help each other, or the people in the Gulf will suffer from our inability to communicate over our distinctive perspectives.
This sounds like social science to me. This sounds like psychology, not theology. Relationships are productive. I would almost expect to see this in some sort of a sensitivity training PowerPoint presentation you'd get at a big multinational corporation. We need to overcome our distinctives because relationships are productive, and had the Good Samaritan not known the innkeeper, then he would never have been able to overcome the distinctives, and he would have been trapped in his dysfunction. No matter how, whether you couch it in the language of social science or psychology, it's still moralism. He hasn't said anything that's technically wrong. I mean, he is telling us what we ought to do. He has not told us that we haven't done it, and that this displeases God. He hasn't told us that our real sins are that not only even when we write the check for the Katrina victims, and that's fine, we don't love them the way we ought to. We don't love them as we love ourselves. We write the check because we feel guilty, or we think it's our obligation, or it's a tax write-off, or maybe we just are overcome by the emotion of how bad those lives have turned out to be. But getting to the heart of the law, I mean, if we're going to do moralism, then do it. If you're going to talk about the moral statutes in the Bible, don't sit here and pussyfoot around in social science. Do it. Convict us with the law. Show us that our root problem is we haven't loved our neighbors as ourselves, and that simply shows that we do not love God with our heart, mind, soul, and everything that is in us, and that we are not keepers of the law, not pleasers of God, and that we need someone who has done it for us, namely Jesus Christ. Now, is that so hard? You can even preach this parable, if you want to, I guess, as nothing but moral teaching. This parable of the Good Samaritan, as nothing but sheer moral preaching, and still get to the cross. But you got to get to Jesus before you get to the cross, and T.D. Jakes hasn't gotten to Jesus. He says it's not important what we say. He's gotten through his 5 points. It's not important what we say. It's important what we do. Bishop Jakes, it is important what you say. When you're standing in the pulpit, called, as you say you are, to preach Christ to sinners, maybe that's not what you think you're called to do. That might explain something. But as any Christian preacher would be called to preach Christ and the good news of Christ for sinners, it is important what you say. It's vitally important what you say. Look how seriously Paul takes what he says, what he preaches. So far that he would even, look, he just says, I am just going to preach Christ and him crucified. And it's going to be a stumbling block to Jews. And it's going to be foolishness to Greeks. And it is going to be considered foolishness and weakness by everyone who hears it and doesn't believe it. But to us who believe and are being saved, it is the power of God and the wisdom of God.
Somewhere down in New Orleans, between the city lights that once glimmered and shined and the skyscrapers that once pointed toward heaven, and a smaller city called Slidell, is a bridge called the Twin Span Bridge. You can't see it now because it's submerged beneath water. It has been victimized by the storm and the breaking of the levee, but it will be built back again. I say to you that as we build back that bridge, that twin span bridge, perhaps God would bless us to find a way to build the bridges between us, between our perspectives and our ideas and our opinions. While we're building cities and building bridges, let's build unity. We cannot multiply by dividing. We cannot add by subtracting. But if we would dare to build a bridge, I refuse to believe, in light of all of the talent, intellectual properties, resources, influential people in this country, that we couldn't make a real difference if we would just try. Well, I'm glad to see the bridge going back up between Slidell and New Orleans, but I'll be far happier to see the bridge build up between blacks and whites, between browns and blacks, between Democrats and Republicans, between right and left, until we understand that the true vision is one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. I only have 5 points, but those 5 points make up a hand that needs to stretch out the hurting and the poor and the underserved in this nation. And if we can raise our hands to touch them, then this country and this world will be the place that we were all taught that it could be. May God help us to stretch forth that helping hand. God bless you.
All right, there's the sermon, No Jesus. So, I don't know why I even go through the diagnostic anymore. Why do I do the diagnostic before sermons like this? Because there's no Jesus. to begin with, and if there's no Jesus, you don't go on to the rest of the diagnostic. This is American civil religion. You just heard it. We're going to save this one because it's short and sweet, and it's significant in history, and it was preached in the cathedral to American civil religion. Oh, speaking of American civil religion, oh, by the way, it wasn't Christianity. I don't know if T.D. Jakes is a Christian or not. It's hard for me to see how someone who won't fess up to the doctrine of the Trinity, no matter what he says, no matter how many good things he has to say, someone who will not confess the doctrine of the Trinity could possibly be a Christian. I just don't, the math doesn't work out. I'm sorry. That's too big of a gap to leap. But let's just say for the sake of argument, contrary to what he's willing to confess or not confess, he is a Christian. You wouldn't know it. Maybe he is the next Billy Graham, and the next Billy Graham will be preaching American civil religion, one nation under God, one of the four times he generically mentioned God in this national prayer service on Friday for the victims of Hurricane Katrina there at the Washington National Cathedral. American civil religion. If we can bring this hand and reach it out and do these things, that these 5 points that he's given us, you know, good moral lessons that we should do. If we can do this, then our country will be the country we were all taught that it is. That's the goal of American civil religion. God gets pulled into service of the state. God is here to make sure America becomes what America should be. This is not about saving sinners. This is not about dealing with man's alienation from God. This is simply about building an earthly kingdom. And seeing that everyone gets along with one another and helps one another when things go bad. And that's all the more American civil religion is interested in. And that's all the more it can deliver. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. If you weren't listening for Jesus in this sermon, you might have thought, since it's a famous quote-unquote Christian preacher in a cathedral with all sorts of hymns surrounding it and prayers by various entities, you might have thought that this was a Christian sermon. You would have been wrong. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Let's start with Chet, who calls from his car. Chet, welcome to Issues Etc.
Yes, hello, Pastor. How are you?
Very well.
Good, good. Well, first, I'd like to know, are we supposed to be of the mindset that whenever a man is a pastor or a Christian minister, that every time he speaks, he is supposed to present the gospel message? I mean, I was thinking that, you know, not that I agree with T.D. Jakes' theology or anything like that, but, you know, there could be an occasion where a Christian minister speaks at a public gathering where simply because of the environment that he's speaking in, he may not specifically focus on the Christ, on the cross and Jesus Christ. I was saying, for example, I'll use this scenario, say the community you live in was having a public event, and being that you are a Lutheran pastor of some renown and a good degree of speaking ability, you may be called upon to speak at that gathering, which was not necessarily for the purpose of a Christian occasion. And, you know, wouldn't that be acceptable to have a person of renown such as Billy Graham or T.D. Jakes to speak just in terms of it being a national gathering?
Well, okay, let's say for the sake of argument, that let's talk about Billy Graham rather than T.D. Jakes for a second. Let's say Billy Graham, that one of his, just for sake of argument, one of his hobbies is stamp collecting. He's crazy for stamps. Can't get enough. He's addicted to stamp glue. And he is an expert, unbeknownst to anybody, except for the stamp collectors, in stamp collecting. And the Stamp Collectors Association of America, whoever they may be, invite Billy Graham to come and speak as a lover of stamps and things stamp-like.
All right.
And they say, Billy Graham, we want you to come and talk to us about stamp collecting. We know you're a fellow great and you're a famous man, lover of stamps. Talk about your stamps. Talk about your life as a stamp collector. And just tell us what you know. And Billy Graham goes and he says, fine, that's what I'll do. I'm going to go and talk about stamp collecting because the venue here is stamp collecting.
Okay.
And these are people who want to know my knowledge, my great vast knowledge of stamp collecting. And he goes and he doesn't even mention the Bible, Jesus, the cross, anything. He just sticks with stamps.
Mm-hmm.
I got no problem with that. I really don't.
I knew you were going to go there.
But that's not what happened here. He was invited to come as T.D. Jakes, as pastor of Potter's House, as the preacher for this prayer service, as surrounded by prayer singing choirs in a church, to preach. He's called the preacher to preach. Now,
well, Pastor Todd,
that's that. And so thank you very much, Chad. I appreciate the call. If the pastor, if a Christian, for that matter, if a Christian isn't going to bring Christ to these kind of events, why go? If you go, well, I'm going to go to this thing, but I'm going to leave Christ at home. And I'm just going to talk about the social and moral impact of Hurricane Katrina on our country. Why do we need T.D. Jakes to do that? They should have left it to the president. He can do that. He's got speechwriters. Really? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Well, Bishop T.D. Jakes was not the only one participating in this prayer for Katrina victims service at the National Cathedral. There was an introduction by the Reverend John Bryson Chain. He's Bishop of Washington for the Episcopal Church USA.
On behalf of the Cathedral of St. Peter and St. Paul, the Washington National Cathedral, and Dean Samuel Thames Lloyd, I welcome all of you to this great house of prayer for all people. As the Bishop of Washington, I also extend a special welcome to you, Mr. President, and Mrs. Bush, Vice President Cheney and Mrs. Cheney, members of the Cabinet, the Congress, and the Supreme Court. I also welcome our guests from the ecumenical interfaith communities and Bishop T.D. Jakes, our preacher, and all who have entered this great cathedral, the sixth largest in the world, and all who have come this morning to this sacred space to worship God and to pray for all of those affected by the horrible devastation of Hurricane Katrina. As I extend a welcome to all of you to Washington National Cathedral, located in the heart of the nation's capital, so I welcome you and urge you to recommit yourselves to the great work that lies ahead for this great nation. I welcome and encourage you to remember in your prayers the departed. I welcome you and encourage you to remember in your prayers all those whose lives have been forever changed by this horrible natural disaster. I welcome you and encourage you to remember in your prayers of thanksgiving the heroism of police, fire, and rescue workers, and the generosity and outpouring of compassion and aid given so freely by the American people and offered as well by nations from around the world. And I welcome and encourage you to remember in your prayers the faces of the poor, especially the elderly and the children of New Orleans, who, like so many of the poor in this country, have for too long now been invisible to us as a nation and forgotten. These faces remind us as well of the faces of the poor throughout the global community who cry out for us to touch and heal them. Neglect of the poor must surely make the God of Abraham, the prophets, Moses, Jesus, and Muhammad weep bitter tears. I welcome you to remember in your prayers this morning that prayer without action is simply poetry. My Jesus reminds me always that faith without works of justice and compassion demeans the sacred words and admonitions of the gospel, the good news, and the very meaning and core of our sacred texts. and so welcome. It is good for us to be together in the name of the one God, who reminds us that we are members of one human family, and each of us is related to one another as brothers and sisters. Let us now gather as the family of God and begin our time together in deep and centered prayer, remembering the words of Jesus who said, "As you have done it to the least, my friends, so you have done it to me."
And so Jesus gets pulled into the agenda for American civil religion, too. He becomes the ultimate advocate for American civil religion. For those of you who weren't listening carefully, I just want to note something for you. First of all, to Chet, and thanks for the call, Chet. That was not an introduction to a stamp collecting convention. That was an introduction and a welcome to a worship service. He explicitly said it. And he called Bishop T.D. Jakes, not our local expert on stamp collecting or social and moral problems in the U.S., but our preacher. He repeatedly referred to the one God of Christianity? No. The one God, he said, of Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, David, prophets, Jesus, Muhammad, and anybody else you might want to name. It's the God, the one God of American civil religion that is the one God fits all of American civil religion. You notice that there is no distinction drawn between Christianity, between Jesus and Muhammad. In fact, purposefully, in a designed way, in these introductory remarks for this service at the National Cathedral on Friday, those distinctions are blurred. They're erased. This is American civil religion. This is the definition of this big, long, strange-sounding word called syncretism. This is all religions worship God. But they didn't invite the Mormons. I just don't understand this. Maybe they were invited. I don't know. I don't know why he didn't include Mormonism in there. He could have said the God of Joseph Smith. He could have said the God of the Jehovah's Witness. He could have said the God of the S of the God S of the Wiccans. He could have. Well, just wait. 10-20 years from now, they will be saying that. But right now, we stick with the respectable monotheistic religions in these services. When we come back, we're going to hear from the dean of the Washington National Cathedral, a Muslim imam, a Jewish rabbi, head of the Orthodox Church in America, and others as they participated in this National Day of Prayer and Remembrance for the victims of Hurricane Katrina last Friday at the Washington National Cathedral. It's open lines in the third hour of Issues Etc. Stay tuned.
Listen weekday afternoons to Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is critical for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our address is 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. You can donate by credit card on our resource line, 1-800-737-0172, 1-800-737-0172. For a free audio copy of this hour of Issues Etc., please visit the audio archive section at KFUO.org. Opinions expressed are not necessarily those of AM 850 KFUO. Issues Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.